79 years ago this month, Detroit sports teams and athletes celebrating a winning streak that's never been replicated. The Tigers, Lions, Red Wings, Joe Louis, even the Detroit Police pistol shooting team, everybody won titles. They all came together April 18th, 1936 at Masonic Temple in Detroit and threw themselves a victory party that became Champions Day. Writer Jeff Warniak's here. His piece on efforts to revive Champions Day is in the April issue of Our Detroit magazine, and the title says it all. It was a very good year. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And Charles Avison's here. He has taken up the cause of Champions Day and hoping to refresh our collective memory to the day when the President of the United States and all 48 governors saluted Detroit as the City of Champions. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here. My pleasure.
Spell it out for us, Charles. In that season of 1935-36, give us an idea of who won what.
Well, I mean, the big thing of 1935 was, you know, a lot of people that look back at it look at the Tigers as the focal point, and well, they should be.
Winning their first ever World Series.
First World Series championship. It was their fifth attempt at a World Series. The interesting thing is, like, the angst these people had in the early 1900s, the Tigers went to the World Series three times. They lost all three times. And then their fourth attempt came in 1934, the year before this season. And so they lost in the seventh game of the World Series. They go through an entirely another season in 1935, going into the World Series. Their best hitter, Hank Greenberg, breaks his wrist in the second game. These people are saying, they're going, my God, can we do it again? And they're playing the Cubs, who'd already beat them twice in the world in the early 1900s. You know, this is something that, like, it had to be done, and this was the year.
And they did it.
They did it.
But the year of 1935 started out pretty big in January for Joe Louis.
Absolutely. It all started in January. His first fight at the at Olympia Stadium, and he was actually fighting as an undercard to Max Baer, who was the heavyweight champion. And the interesting thing is that Max Baer, he had this personality. He would be more akin to like a WWF wrestler, where he was like, he would kind of like antagonize the crowd. And so he was up to his antics that fight. But it was Joe Louis who left everybody stunned, because here was this up-and-coming Detroiter who absolutely just wowed everybody in the crowd. And they were like, it's not going to be long before he's ready to challenge Max Baer for the crown.
And then that was the start of the year, and the year went on. I saw from your story, Jeff, we saw sprinter, swimming and diving. Gar Wood won the outboard boat racing. And then, of course, the Lions and the Red Wings.
That's right. Yep. The Lions won their first NFL championship in December. And then come April, the Red Wings won their very first Stanley Cup. And then a day later, the Red Wings minor league affiliate, the Olympics, won their championship. Just a wild string of remarkable achievements.
How'd you come across this story, Jeff?
I don't really remember how I came across it. I was poking around online, and somehow I came across the lone Wikipedia entry on this City of Champions story, which I would come to find out Charles was actually the author of. And I was just reading this Wikipedia article and just absolutely fascinated. How had I never heard that these first championships all came in the same year? These are my favorite sports teams. You know, I watch the Red Wings pretty much every night they play. How had I never heard that this all happened within the same season?
And Charles, you have been trying to carry the cause of this Champions Day for so long. And how did it all come together for you initially?
Initially, it has the most humble beginnings you can think of. It was me and my friend just hanging out in my apartment in Kalamazoo. I was a senior at Western. I had just come back from the University of Edinburgh, Scotland, which was the most intensive history study I've ever had in my life. I was taking a sports history class by total coincidence. It had nothing to do with me and my friends came across this stat. We were just reading this old Detroit Tiger media guide, and it said, did you know that these three teams had all won? And that's really what, I had no idea. It wasn't like a light bulb went off by any means. It was just, I saw the thing. I tried to write a 2-page paper for this history class, and I couldn't do it. There was no books. There was nothing on the internet. I didn't live in 1935. So if I wasn't there and I can't read about it now, how am I supposed to know? You know, I mean, if I can't find it, I'm searching for this stuff. How can people that aren't searching for it? And so that's when it really started to grow. And I made it my thesis to graduate from Western. And I started finding even more information, because I went back to the original newspapers. And then eventually I went to the Detroit Times newspaper, which I never even knew existed. And that's when a whole new world opened up for me, because the Detroit Times absolutely took the very lead in sports coverage in 1935. And it was through them that I really – that's when I wrote the first book, was based on that.
And your quest has taken you a long way. You have this trilogy of books entitled City of Champions. And in your story, Jeff, you take us to this banquet at Masonic. And I want to say I don't think ever since have we seen a bigger collection of sports stars in one place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really amazing. That was one of the most fascinating things I learned about. At the banquet at Masonic Temple – you had stars from the Red Wings were there. Stars from the Tigers were there. Joe Louis was the guest of honor. There were, I guess, about 600 so, maybe 800 people, sports fans, who gathered just to celebrate their city's achievements.
And Charles, the president, was on board with this.
Absolutely. The interesting thing about it is, and this is a short story to tell about just how it ties in with how forgotten this season is. Shortly after the party, they wanted to do something, a commemorative thing, to remember this whole thing. So what they did was they commissioned – I'm not sure who commissioned the actual plaque, but they made this – really, it's a 5-foot tall wooden mahogany, gorgeous wooden board, intricately designed, intricately carved with all these sports figures all around the edges. And what they did, it was made in Grand Rapids. The company that made the plaque, they sent these small little wooden tabs to every governor in the country to have them signed and returned. And they told them what the reason was and everything. And then they also sent one to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And they returned the tabs after a certain amount of time, and they affixed them to this board. And there's a beautiful thing at the top which says, to summarize, you know, we around the country, you know, salute Detroit for this incredible achievement. We recognize you as the city of champions. From that point on, nobody really knows what happened to the plaque, but it resurfaced in 1985 at a flea market in Armada. It had been sitting outside in the rain for 2 days. Yes, and I met the guy that found it, who told me the story of where it came from, that he had found it in this flea market in Armada, sitting out in the rain. The lady that had it said her husband had found it in a school that they were ripping down. And they and then her husband saw it was just so cool that he just had to have it. And it was sitting in her garage for years, and then she brought it to this flea market because she just wanted it out of her garage. Mm-hmm. And originally she wanted like $300 for it. He got it for $30. He got the plaque for $30, and then he had it restored, and then they donated it to the Detroit Historical Museum.
So it can be seen today.
Absolutely. It's mounted inside of a glass case now at the museum.
With all that momentum, guys, with all of, you know, the president signs it, and how about this for unity? All 48 governors signed
yes.
it, and the excitement in Detroit. How did it come to be so easily forgotten, Charles?
Well, it's really a combination of factors, I believe. The concept being is that World War II begins in 1939 when Hitler invades Poland. The earliest mentions of World War II, you're going back to 1934 with the Night of the Long Knives mm-hmm. with Hitler in that. And so there's this feeling of like they've already been through World War I. It's already on people's recent memory. World War II is on the horizon. And then World War II hits. Sports become completely unimportant.
Plus they were in the middle. It's like the worst of the Depression.
Absolutely.
Right then. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And Detroit is the hardest hit city in the entire mm-hmm. country in the Depression. That's what's so remarkable about the season is that they have this greatest season with the hardest hit country that needs it the most. But yeah, the World War II happens. Sports become completely unimportant. And when they return from war, within just 2 months of coming back from war, the Tigers win the World Series. So they come back from war as World Series champions. And then over the next 12 years, you have the Lions and Red Wings win 7 championships in that decade in the 1950s. The auto industry comes back. This is a golden age of Detroit. Who's going to stop and say, let's stop all the celebrations, folks, and look back and, you know, remember 1935. A lot of it was on people's minds. But there's a couple other things, I think, too, that factor into it is that, you know, it's hard to look at these people that lived through the Great Depression and then fought in this war. You know, imagine trying to tell the story of something like a father trying to tell his son about going to a Red Wings game with his Uncle Johnny. Well, maybe Uncle Johnny didn't come home from the war. So now these memories are sort of painful memories. A lot of these things are lumped into the sum. And also the disappearance of the Detroit Times, who were the ones that actually financed the party, who had taken the lead on sports and everything when the Detroit Times folded in 1960. People that go back and look for stories, if they're not looking at a defunct old newspaper, then how are they supposed to find it?
I know, Jeff, as you write in Our Detroit about Charles, obsessed isn't the right word to describe Avison's dedication. Zealous is better. And you clearly caught the fever from talking to Charles about this whole City of Champions. What do you think Champions Day and the City of Champions could and should mean to us in 2015?
Well, it was actually Charles had a really nice – he made a really nice point when I was doing this story. He said Detroit is entering a period of a renaissance, and a renaissance – by definition, is a revival, a rediscovery of the great stories, the great literature, great art of the past. And this is one of those stories that really deserves to be brought back and revived. So I think today it's a wonderful opportunity. It's a tailor-made holiday to celebrate Detroit's wonderful sports achievements. And Detroit has a reputation as a sports town. And if there's a moment in time that we can point to that explains why Detroit is a sports town, this is it. It's April 1936.
Well, it certainly is just this stunning collection. Even the billiards guy did well.
Everything. I mean, it's every sport. My favorite example is Newell Banks, who's the 1935 World Checkers champion. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did a list in my third book about every championship, and you have 33 championships in 1935. 33. It's just incredible that it's in virtually every sport that one can think of.
Jeff Warniak's story, It Was a Very Good Year, is in the April issue of Our Detroit magazine. And Charles Avison's trilogy of books is City of Champions. Guys, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Cindy.